Welcome to That's a Dive, everyone. I'm Kyle Martino. I'm here with producer Mike. We have a really exciting show for you. We have a new clock, by the way. So I don't just imagine how long 10 minutes is. I mean, I can't do that. I'm not smart.
You're going to forget it's there, though.
I will forget the clock's there. So typically, I try to keep an eye on a clock, which is always Mike's iPhone, which always like gets a text or like a call in the middle.
Or just goes blank.
So we finally got a clock. Huge budget here on That's a Dive. Huge budget. But we have something fun for you guys today. It's Halloween. Trick or treat, everyone. And we got a treat for you because I sent out a tweet the other day, trick or tweet, and asked everyone for their best soccer costume ideas.
Might have been your most popular responses ever.
Yeah, yeah. So that was really fun. So right now we're going to do a fun segment about Halloween. I think that was a track off of Dr. Dre's new Halloween album. Where on earth did you get that from, producer Mike?
I don't even want to tell you.
Oh, gosh.
There were some just equally
late at night
ones.
Looking through. Weird. I wanted Monster Mash, but I would imagine that's not in the budget yet. I mean, we spent all our budget on a clock.
Yeah.
Here are some of the best ones. This is It's Saul Good, Bus Driver. With a Jose Mourinho nameplate.
That's good. I like it.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I haven't heard that one yet. We have dress up as an angel. You know, just simple angel costume. Mm-hmm. And when people say, oh, you're an angel, you tell everyone you're Pulisic. You're Christian Pulisic.
It's so sad that he's not going to be playing this summer.
There's just going to be too many people that won't ask you
why
you're an angel. They'll just say, that's a silly costume. All right. Oh, wait. Who was that? Sorry. I don't want to take the credit away from...
Yeah, name check.
Kundi 21. All right, who do we got here? We've got Ludolube, and he says, dressed as a shark in a Barcelona shirt, Suarez bite. That's decent. Or dressed like Jesus in a Man U shirt, number 19, Jesus Rashford.
It would be better if you could dress up as in a city kit,
don't
you think?
I like your first one. Let's stick with your first one. The Suarez bite's decent. Chiellini with a miniature Suarez biting his shoulder. Someone has to have done that one.
And you could do that pretty easily. You could just take like a little stuffed animal, put a Suarez face on it or something.
And like a Barcelona kit.
Yeah.
And
that was in the World Cup, though, so you'd have to be in the earthquake.
I like that. And then maybe you have your friend be Luis Suarez handball against Ghana, and you make it a World Cup themed.
So many options with
Suarez,
with him.
Because you love the group costumes.
Oh yeah.
One year in New York City, we went, me and my buddies, as the running of the bulls, and one of our buddies dressed up like a bull, and we all wore the white and the red sash, and we would run from bar to bar through the middle of the streets, like jumping over
cabs
and
good.
Stuff.
And
that's
great.
That was really, really fun, although it got kind of dangerous later on. And then there's some really funny picture ones.
A couple of gifts people sent out.
So we've got a kicker treat, which is a half of a soccer ball that's taped to the front of a shirt and blood all around it, which is very creative. Points for creativity. Go as Louis Van Gaal and walk up to people with a clipboard and fall over.
Yeah.
I mean, that.
Who sent that out so they can see his gif?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or her gif.
This is the Nick Bradford came up with that. Loving that, Nick Bradford. I mean, the good part about, soccer costume ideas is, you cruise around and, only hardcore soccer fans really know.
Yeah.
So it's, such a funny inside joke. Someone said go as Big Bird and say you're Marouane Fellaini. I mean, that's pretty good. That's John Wolacko. So that was fun. I mean, you guys, I take the pictures, right? That's the next step. Take the picture of your soccer costume idea or the best soccer costume ideas that you saw. Hit me at Kyle Martino, and we'll go through them. But those were so good. We got some great responses. All right, now on to the soccer. We have three topics today. Arsenal's potential. There's been a little bit of a bounce back with Arsenal, and we're seeing something really special about their group that we want to spend some time and talk about. Where does Everton go from here? We saw post-Koeman, and it did not look good.
No, it did not.
So pre-post Koeman, not so good. Spurs without Kane. So let's start there. Pep Guardiola said recently, Spurs are the Harry Kane team, right? And Pochettino did not like that very much.
He took exception to that
comment. He took major exception to that. And I don't think Pep meant it in that way, really. But Pochettino said, listen, I never said that Barcelona was the Messi team. So you know, pump the brakes, Pep.
Right.
There's history with those guys, so I think it's more there's just a predisposition to think shots are fired when maybe they aren't. Mm-hmm. But Spurs the other day, no Harry Kane. Hamstring injury, missed out on that game. The funniest was when it was announced. I think it was the day before, because up until the day before, there was a chance he was gonna play.
Yes.
And then the day before the news comes out that fitness tests came back, no bueno, and he wasn't going to play. And then there were amazing GIFs? I mean, I've heard
GIFs,
both sides.
But I want an official answer. Does someone out there have an official answer?
Yeah, hit us up with, what is it? Is it GIF? Is it GIF? Anyway, whatever it's called, there were some funny ones about like Mourinho's reaction when he found out that Harry Kane was going to be hurt.
Yeah, his whole talk about don't talk to me about injuries.
Yeah, Pogba, you know, Fellaini.
He chucked in a Rojo.
Rojo, don't throw in Rojo. I mean, come on. And what did Mourinho do a couple of weeks before? He said, like, you never hear me complaining about injuries.
Yeah.
And that's literally all he's done since he said that.
He loves to list the list. Just go through it.
I wasn't on that weekend. But we got a little Mourinho. I was. Yeah.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
I was on. So we got a little great Mourinho soundbite of some of the things he was saying. And then this weekend before the game, we got some amazing. I mean, the pre-match interview was incredible with Mourinho. It's just so condescending.
He was
and
on fire this weekend. He complimented the refereeing after that game.
Oh, it was so good.
But yeah, back to Tottenham.
Yeah, so Spurs. They struggle without Harry Kane. So, listen, that's not groundbreaking. This is not top-level analysis. They're not as good with Harry Kane. They've tried Son up top before.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the other options that we've seen, even going back to Soldado, which is why Harry Kane became Harry Kane. You know, he was knocking in the goals in Europa League, and finally they said, you know, we have to let this guy play in the Premier League, and he's been scoring ever since. They've yet to find, and we say it season after season, they've yet to find a even close to worthy understudy. And I think Son's the best option. Doesn't play that position often. Has for South Korea from time to time, but has played even left wing back for Spurs from time to time. But brings a lot of the qualities that Harry Kane brings. He stretches the back line. He's got pace. He works hard. He can hold the ball up well. He can link well. He's a good goal scorer. But he's just, he is very much an understudy. He is not ready for the starring role. And, you know, I watched Spurs through most of that game, and you know, I saw an inability to break down Manchester United, and you knew it was going to need this. It just needed a bit of that special quality that Harry Kane brings. So I saw them dominate through stretches of the game. I saw a lot of fluidity. I saw Christian Eriksen trying to run through the midfield. There was that amazing ball that Eriksen played to Dele Alli over the top. That was their best chance, yeah. And Dele Alli should have buried it. But outside that, I mean, they really didn't create a lot of clear-cut chances. So it's a big issue. In the short term, it's a big issue because they do rely on him a ton. And listen, Barcelona relies on Suarez, and you know, Bayern Munich has relied on Lewandowski, and Manchester City over the years has relied a lot on Sergio Aguero. So mm-hmm. So it's not a slight to say they rely too much on one of the best strikers in the world right now. Of course you're going to rely a lot on that guy. It's just the problem is if there's ever a time to rest him or a time he's struggling with fitness, it is a pretty big drop-off to the next option.
Do you put more – should there be more production out of these other players behind Kane in his absence? You mentioned Eriksen. You mentioned Dele. We spoke about Son. Are those players good enough to carry a load when Kane isn't in the lineup?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think yes, but that's not that remains to be seen. You know, guys, I think the Robbies think that's one area that they need to strengthen.
Yeah.
And that's one area I know Robbie Musto has gone strong on for a while here, that they need just another really creative, attacking-minded force who can score goals behind. You know, Christian Eriksen from time to time is that guy. Dele Alli is probably of the group most that guy. I mean, he is the false nine. He plays very, very high.
Right.
He isn't the goal-scoring threat this season that he's been in the past, but he showed that he gets in those spots. He can do it. And I think back to Liverpool. Remember when Suarez was suspended and was out for a stretch? They got goals from Sturridge. They got goals from Sterling. Mm-hmm. They got other guys to chip in. And I remember they were so reliant on Suarez at that point, and that was going to be a big question mark. How did they handle not having Luis Suarez? And that's how they did it, goal scoring through the midfield. If you look at Manchester City right now and why they're so successful, they're successful because the goal scoring spread out. They don't rely on Sergio Aguero as much as they used to. I mean, it's Gabriel Jesus, it's Sané, it's Kevin De Bruyne, it's Sterling. Mm. I mean, they hit you from all over the place. And Spurs have to just listen. Harry Kane has an amazing fitness record, so maybe they can just hope he's back soon, and maybe he's back for the Champions League match today.
Is it today or tomorrow?
Anyway, he could be back for Champions League. So, you know, Spurs have struggled a bit against the big six in away matches. I mean, under Pochettino.
Yeah, that's my next question. I wanted to hit you with this.
Yeah.
I asked the research team to look into this for me because I had a sense that they haven't been doing well against the big teams in away matches, and they went back and looked it up. Since Pochettino came in, 14-15, they have one win in 16 away matches at the big six.
Yeah, and that's such a surprising stat. And here's why. You know who's really good away, but also really good against the top six, is Liverpool under Klopp. One of the reasons that is because when you're a pressing team, and that's part of your strategy, that's part of your offensive strategy, to create chances by picking off the ball high up, and gegenpressing a little bit different than the way Pochettino plays. I mean, Klopp is more about sort of a medium block and then winning the ball back quickly after you lose it, which is a thing that Pep really likes too. But Pochettino's is more of like a really all-out, high-intensity, high press. When you play against top teams, they're typically the ones that won't just lump the ball. They're typically the teams that will build out of the back. Mm-hmm. So you'd think, away from home, when you're playing at Old Trafford, you're playing at Anfield, you're playing at the Emirates, you're playing at the Etihad, there's a pressure for those teams to put the ball on the ground and build out of the back. So you should actually, when you play big games, even be better with the style that they have. So that's a hard one to answer. I mean, it's a really hard one to figure out why they're not so dominant away. Here's how I try to answer this. And, you know, Manchester United under Mourinho is a good example because he is pragmatic even when he plays at home against big teams. But I think they just have a lot of respect. I mean, over the past 2 years, no team has accrued as many points as Spurs. They've been the most consistent, best team in the Premier League. And Jose Mourinho said in his interview before the game that he considers Spurs the best team in the Premier League. Pep probably said, yeah, of course you said that. But it's clear that teams respect Spurs. So I think one reason why they struggle a bit away from home is teams are more pragmatic when Spurs come into town than when other top six teams come in. I mean, that's a bit of a reach because I can think back to games where Arsenal or others did open up and did go after them. But you're kind of grabbing at straws there because they should be a pretty dominant team away from home. The other thing they had was at White Hart Lane, they were so dominant at home that they didn't really have to be as aggressive on the road. And that could be the area where they could maybe save a bit, especially when they're in other competitions, something they haven't really had to deal with at this level consistently like they're having to do in the last four seasons. So, I mean, it's an issue. It's something they have to fix. But most importantly, they have to figure out, I don't even think your clock's working, by the way.
It's working. I'll explain to you. It's working. I got a minute left.
Okay, I don't understand it. So I just think the Harry Kane problem is the biggest one. It's short term. How do you make sure that when Harry Kane's out, you can stay as efficient and as dangerous in the attacking side of the game as you are when he's in? But then long term, I mean, this is not for this minute, but long term, what if you can't keep Harry Kane? I mean, Real Madrid, right? He finally gave a tiny, tiny hint, the tiniest of hints, but he never gives hints, that he was flattered by links with a team like Real Madrid. I mean, that's how these things start. That's how these things start is, yeah, you know what? That'd be flattering. But when you open that, oh, it'd be flattering door, basically presidents of other clubs with the money they have, they say, you know, prepare the gold bullion.
It's hard to blame a person for having his eyes drawn towards Madrid. That's the biggest club in the world. You can't really blame him.
No. So, yeah. Oh, my God. That whistle is so loud in my ear. Hopefully we get that figured out for the Tide Potters because I can't hear right now. It's ringing in my ears.
So much for that
sound
check.
Just warn me next time when you do the whistle and I'll take my headphones off.
So much for the sound
check, I guess. On to Everton. So Koeman's gone, and I'm not going to waste time talking about it being the right decision. I did that on air, and I did that on I think, the last pod. Koeman created a real problem for himself at Everton, and it looks knee-jerky, but it's not. $200 million spent in the relegation zone. Mashiri had to act, and they did. Now they've got David Unsworth, okay? A man who Everton fans know very well from his playing days. He's coached youth teams. He's been a part of the setup for a long time, right? He bleeds blue. He is a big part of the club. He wants the job, right?
He's been very vocal.
Sometimes these guys, the caretakers or the interims come in and they placate, right? They're very non-committal and they just want to be a part of the group moving forward, so they don't really go big. He went big.
Yeah.
Not only in what he said, but what he did. So the Robbies pointed this out before the game when they did the lineups, and I thought it was amazing. The $200 million spent, right, to bring players in, not a penny on the field in Unsworth's first 11. He didn't use any of the players that they spent all of this money to bring in. Any of the field players that they brought in to make a difference that, by the way, they have Steve Walsh now. Steve Walsh is their football director who is famous for creating Leicester's championship season by finding diamonds in the rough like Mahrez and like N'Golo Kanté, right? So here's what Unsworth does. Now, let me talk about why I like it a bit. He comes in, and sometimes you see managers just pick up where the other guy left off, make tiny little changes, but there's no real ideas. You really don't see how they're going to change the team, how they're going to impact the team. They're just relying on the managerial balance, and you don't see their fingerprints on the turnaround. You saw Unsworth's fingerprints all over that starting 11. I mean, Morales and Lennon.
Lennon's still on Everton? It was sort of like a what?
It was his first minutes of the season, wasn't it?
It might have been. It was certainly his first start since before he had that mental health issue at the end of last season, which is no joking matter. But that lineup came through, and we were sort of like in the studio, like, what?
Is this? I saw it at home. I almost spit my coffee out. So he goes with a really big lineup that says, I want this job, and I'm going to show you what's been wrong with this team, and I'm going to show you I can turn it around. So he puts that starting 11 up, and they struggle big time, right? I mean, especially the first half. I mean, they seemed clueless. They were languid. They were disorganized. They were disjointed. They were everything you don't want to see in a team. So here's why that big, bold decision has burned David Unsworth. That was a huge gamble and a gamble that didn't pay off. And I look at that gamble in a couple ways. One, I say, well, what made you think that was going to work? Okay? Because it didn't, and it was very clear. So you got your first big tactical decision wrong, and you made a big tactical decision. That kind of worries me. This one's big, too. If you want to be a successful manager of a club in the modern day, you have to have a very good relationship with the director of football. You absolutely do. Clubs are creating these sort of departments now. It's rare that, you know, the Sir Alex Fergusons and the old guard and Arsene Wenger is the only one left with anywhere near this kind of clout and this kind of power, even though they're trying to take it back from him right now and bring a director of football into Arsenal. Now it's departments, right? If you're the manager, you're in charge of the starting 11, you're in charge of that team. Of course, we want your input, but you're not picking who we sign. You're not picking who we buy. We're doing that. We have scouts, we have a department, we do the contracts. You concentrate on your area, we'll concentrate on ours. That's where the modern game is headed. Now, every club isn't there yet,
right,
but Everton's a club that's headed in that direction, right? Ken Wright's still there advising Mashiri, and Steve Walsh is the director of football trying to build a successful team and use this Mashiri's billions to get them into the top four so that when they have a new stadium, which is on the horizon, They're in Champions League and they're hosting Champions League games there. So to not play any of the guys that Steve Walsh brought in makes Steve Walsh look bad. You just made your director of football look really, really bad. So if that worked, you had a problem, because then he's got pressure because his bosses are saying, listen, you bought all these guys. He just won with everything that we had before. Why did you make me stroke a $200 million check if we didn't need those guys? That's the first problem. He doesn't have that problem. He has the bigger problem of it didn't work, and now you've embarrassed the director of football. And Mashiri's saying, were those the right guys? Because Unsworth doesn't seem to think so. And you're starting off on the wrong foot. So he's not getting this job. There's no way he ends up with this job. And it was going to be an uphill battle for him. It was going to be an outside chance to begin with. And now he has no chance after that first game. So Everton now are spiraling. I mean, they're in a spiral right now where they – and we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Obviously, right. They're interviewing people. But no clear examples or definitive reports on who they have and are they close to signing. I said before the report came out that Thomas Tuchel would be perfect for this role, in my opinion. He's available. He's worked really well with young players. He plays a style that's pleasing on the eye, a style that Everton was trying to install with Koeman, but not as sort of ambitious and I think naive is what Koeman was trying to do to a certain extent. So they've got a serious problem, because not only are they going to have to battle to finish in the top half of the table with how they've started the season, but they still have no replacement for Lukaku. I mean, they still haven't figured out how to solve that Lukaku problem. Now, Calvert-Lewin played up top this last game. Many have been asking for that. He was wearing the protective mask, which I had to wear one time when I broke my nose at UVA. You can't see the ball when you wear that thing.
You have no peripheral vision.
And if you watch the game, there was a chance early on that came to him in the box, and it did get deflected right before it came to him, but he completely whiffed the ball. And then watch him, like, the first few times he got the ball, he's staring down at it. So that's a temporary thing, but you know, that did not help his chances, because he hasn't been given a lot of them. It just highlights that this Olivier Giroud situation, right? They went after Olivier Giroud. Olivier Giroud entertained the idea, but decided not to go. Again, I feel like we've talked about this a lot with the transfer window. It seems like a lot of clubs did this. They put all their eggs in one basket, and when they missed out on that target, they were left with nothing. Mm. So they don't have Olivier Giroud or anything that resembles a consistent number nine. I mean, Wayne Rooney would be, for me, the top of the list, their best consistent number nine, but he can't play that position week in and week out for Everton. And by the way, he hasn't played that position week in and week out for like a decade. So it's not looking good at Everton right now. I'm a little bit worried.
Take me to what the training ground looks like today, which is probably, or yesterday, their first day back after, it's probably today, when you have players like Sigurdsson left on the bench, coming in for huge money. Klaassen wasn't even in the squad. New signing.
Yeah.
Vlasic, who's actually been good this
season. I like him a lot.
Wasn't in the squad.
Yeah.
What are those players thinking when they show up at training and they look at Unsworth and they're thinking, I'm not good enough to even
They're play? Thinking this. They're doing two things. One is they're having their agent get on the phone and say, what's up in January? Are there any buyers, anyone interested, especially Klaassen, who was brought in because of his ties to Ajax and how good he was in that system, and Koeman wanting to install a bit of that total football. So Klaassen's gone. I would imagine Klaassen leaves in January. I think that's the wrong decision, because I think he's an excellent player and they should take time with some of these young guys. But they're all telling their agent, get on the horn. But then the other thing they're doing to hedge that is saying, listen, let's just wait to see who gets this job. Because that's all that matters. You know, whoever comes in now, I've got a week or two to show them why I'm important to this group. Of course, whoever comes in will have watched the team, which unfortunately won't tell him much about the guys they've signed.
Yeah, right.
So I'm sure they're hoping he doesn't watch or didn't watch. But they'll hold out. They'll wait till and that's on the powers that be at Everton to fix that quickly. I mean, they need to hire someone fast. Now, don't just hire anyone and panic. But if you were thinking of firing Koeman, I want to believe that you were already on the horn putting together a short list of guys and reaching out to their agents and saying, is this a waste of our time? Or, like, I know that at most clubs you don't do that because you're not sure if you want to fire the guy, and you don't want speculation to get out because that can be detrimental to the chemistry in the group. But the writing was on the wall; they were going to fire Koeman. So, hopefully, for Everton football fans' sake, they've had several first meetings and follow-up meetings, and they have a runoff and have a couple candidates that they're thinking through, and they're getting ready to hire someone. I would think maybe this weekend might be too quickly, but I'd say Monday, expect an Everton announcement. We have hired so-and-so. That's what I'd expect.
In on time here.
Boom. Didn't blow my ears out that time either. All right, so that kind of moves us on to Arsenal, yeah. and a natural transition about the Giroud situation. I mean, here's the tough part for Olivier Giroud. He makes the decision to stay at Arsenal, right? And I respect that. You know, I don't think – listen, he hasn't gotten a lot of love from Arsenal fans. He's been a consistent goal scorer. He hasn't thrown a fit when he hasn't been used regularly, right? I mean, he's been a consistent goal scorer, but hasn't been given a consistent starting position. Hasn't made any gripes about that. No training ground bust ups, no interviews, and anything that creates problems for Arsene Wenger and the group. He's been a consummate pro, and by the way, still scoring goals off the bench. But now Arsenal have something with Lacazette, Mesut Ozil, and Alexis that keeps Olivier Giroud out of the team a lot. I think he'll still be important. He's still kind of the plan B guy when you know that trio isn't working. Games where teams maybe are bunkering in, or a West Brom that's very physical, and not only do you need him on the attacking side of things, you need his big body on set pieces. So he'll be used, he'll be important, but he's going to see less time because I think Arsene Wenger was hesitant to put Lacazette in consistently and wanted him to get caught up and get up to speed. He's getting up to speed. And that trio is...
How good is that trio?
Outside of what Manchester City have, that's the best trio in the Premier League. I mean, I would say the only one that rivals it is the Firmino, Mane, Coutinho trio.
Mo.
Yeah, Salah. Yeah. I mean that's a quartet. I mean it's insane what they have. But yeah, I see something really special with that group. The only question I have, it's new. We haven't seen the three of them starting together long. It's only been about a month of it, and you know, two or three times. The games we've seen them start, Everton, Swansea, I mean, against teams that are kind of sitting back, against teams that aren't making it very physical, against teams that are struggling to a certain extent. I mean, that might be a little harsh on Swansea, but, you know, yeah, you're going to be dominant as they were against Swansea after, you know, conceding, but against the grain, you know, against the run of play and still performing well and coming back and getting back into that game at home. But, I mean, Swansea, especially in the second half, were just bunkered in. I mean, they were as deep as you can get. So those are games where Mesut Ozil isn't going to expose himself as a luxury. Now, I don't think he's entirely a luxury. I think that's a bit harsh, but Arsenal fans are really critical of him. And when he was out for that stretch, when he was injured, they played some big games, and they were able to compete and really match the physicality and the work rate of other teams.
They had a bit of bite in their game.
That's a good way to put it, that they don't really have when Mesut Ozil's out there. Now, remember, Jose Mourinho used him in this way at Real Madrid. I mean, Real Madrid are dominating almost every game they're playing, but Jose would bring him in and out of the lineup a lot. He didn't have a regular, consistent starting place. I mean, he was a starter, but he'd be rotated out of the group from time to time. You know, Arsene Wenger's never done that. Arsene Wenger starts him, plays him the whole game. I mean, he can do no wrong in Arsene Wenger's eyes. So I think the best way forward is to realize, listen, people were worried that Chile getting knocked out of the World Cup was going to affect Alexis. He's playing great. I mean, he's looking really good recently. He looks hungry. He looks confident. He looks with whatever they're trying to do. Now, I think they lose him in the summer, but at this point, that's the situation they have. Unless they want to sell him in January, they're just going to have to deal with that. Mesut Ozil, they could lose him as well. I mean, in January, we could be getting announcements that both these guys have signed pre-contracts with a team abroad.
That would be an interesting
season. That would be a huge... I mean, it's already a huge mistake that it's gotten to this point, but that would be detrimental to what they're doing because they're rebounding well. They're putting together a nice little run here. But what Arsene Wenger needs to do is is rotate a bit. So just look at the team you're playing. Don't look at what you want to do and look at who you want to be. Look at the opposition. I mean, Jose Mourinho, as hard as I am on Jose Mourinho, and as much as a couple of podcasts ago I said he's bad for bad right. for football, which is about the biggest criticism you could make of a manager, you have to respect that his attention to detail and his respect for opponents. I mean, even in a Europa League final, a bunch of teenagers, an Ajax team that cost as much to build as one of Pogba's toes, I mean, he respected them and won with a strategy. So, listen, it's not pretty, it's not fun to watch, it's not entertaining, but he wins games and can change things, can be fun and entertaining, can open up the group. Arsene Wenger has to show he has more than one trick, right? He needs to take Mesut Ozil out of games where they're playing a Spurs and you need someone who battles and covers ground and gets into the physical battle. Maybe against West Brom, he's not the guy to be in a fight there, or against Stoke. You know, but there are games you absolutely need him, because I think he's world class. I think he has a composure, a vision, a tempo, a nous that's the upper echelon of player. So if you just protect him, Mesut Ozil, I'm saying, from his weaknesses and don't put him in games where he's not right for, then you can play two holders in that game, because the other thing he likes to do is play Ramsey in a deeper position and let him bomb forward. And that works against Swansea. Ramsey gets the winning goal. That's not going to work in many big games. They're going to get caught out. So just show that you have a willingness to rotate the squad and show respect to the opposition. Just do it. You're Arsenal. We know that on any given day you can beat anyone and you look amazing. You're one of the most entertaining teams to watch, but you don't have to prove that to anyone. No, no one's asking you to win the Premier League in the most beautiful way it's ever been won. Like, let Pep try to do that, because, by the way, many think he's not going to be able to pull that off. So just show a bit of restraint and discipline and change the team based on who you're playing. And so I love the trio. I think they're excellent. I mean, they are so much fun to watch. And Mesut Ozil also, I think, respects what they have with Ramsey bombing forward through the middle and Lacazette and Alexis, and he stays a bit wide on the right. He stayed pretty wide in this game, as opposed to floating around a lot like he does in other games. And so you see that they enjoy it, that they like it. So stick with that, right? Go with that as much as you can. Have that be plan A. But just, you know, from time to time, you have to be willing to switch it up.
So this weekend, they have a huge game.
Yeah.
They're at City. Mm-hmm. City are flying.
Yeah.
Smashing records. Off to the best start in Premier League history. What does Wenger do?
I hope he does what he did at the Etihad a few seasons ago, when he basically bunkered in. I mean, it was amazing. I remember the man of the match in that game was Santi Cazorla, who was asked to play a defensive midfield position next to, who was it on that day?
Would it have been Coquelin?
I can't remember. I can't remember who it was.
I'll take a look and see if I can find it.
But anyway, It was almost a smash and grab. I mean, they had 30% possession. Cazorla was a man possessed.
God, I miss him.
Oh, he was so good. I mean, that it's just not talked about enough because he's been really gone for so long. I mean, put him into this midfield next to, I mean, Xhaka still has some learning to do, but put him next to Elneny, Xhaka, and maybe toss Ramsey ahead of them. Or if you like to play this 3-4-3 that they've been playing recently, just play Santi Cazorla next to Xhaka and that three in front of them. Oh, my God. I would just do anything to see that right now. But that day, they beat a very good Manchester City team with a defensive, pragmatic strategy. Do it again. Do it again. Because if you open up and you sort of you fall victim to the temerity and the arrogance of wanting to beat Pep at his own game, you are going to get thrashed. This Manchester City team is, if someone gives them space and time, is irresistible.
Yeah.
Absolutely irresistible. So it would be a massive mistake. Listen, they did it against Chelsea, right? Arsenal, and not only the FA Cup final, but also in the league, they went after Chelsea. I mean, they opened up, they pressed them, they were free-flowing, they were balanced, and they got away with it because when they needed to be, in the second half of that game at Stamford Bridge, I believe it was, they sat back and saw out to get 1 point. Arsenal. They said, okay, we almost got ahead in the first half. We were the better team. Second half, let's sit back. Let's get out of here with a point. Amazing strategy. I was really impressed on the day with Arsene Wenger showing that discipline and getting that tactical message across. Do it again. Do it again to Manchester City. You can frustrate them, right, with a back three. And I think Mertesacker actually strengthens that back three, even though he's been kind of the, not one away, but people have wanted him away for a while here. Play the back three. Klasinac, I mean, don't let him bomb forward as much. Mm-hmm. Bellerin, you know, don't fly forward as much. I mean, you have the pace, and we have the ability to get into the attack. Play two holders. You know, don't play Ramsey and Xhaka. Play Xhaka and someone else, a defensive-minded guy next to him. Save Ramsey for a game you need to get back into if you concede. Bring him in when you need to go chase the game. And just be terrible. Be so hard to break down. So, I mean, that will frustrate Manchester City. And they'll push. They'll press. And listen, they're missing some pieces too. So there are some vulnerabilities there.
Right here. There we are.
Boom.
Okay, before we leave.
Yeah.
I forgot what I was going to ask you. I had a big question.
It's perfect. I've got the answer for that.
I
like
okay.
the clock. I like the clock. Quick, I still don't get how it worked because
this is what I wanted
count
to
down.
Ask you. Oh, I set the clock for 1 hour and 10 minutes so that this alarm wouldn't go off and throw you off.
You're a genius.
Yeah, not really.
No, I'm so confused.
If Arsenal get a result, they draw, they get a win.
Mm-hmm.
Are they a title contender? Can they stay in the chase? That's the question I wanted to ask you.
Toss me a table real quick. They are. I mean, what they're? I was just looking at it. They are.
I got it right here.
Let me do my maths. They are 9 points off of the top.
Yes.
Where are they?
Yeah, they're nine points off.
I mean, I don't think they're title contenders this season, right? But 9 points is not. Insurmountable.
No, it's not.
Right? You can make that up for sure. Because I mean, you know, if you look at the table right now, you know, there are Spurs, right? I mean, just 1 point above them. I mean, Manchester United 4 points above them. I mean, those teams are in a title race. So it'd be ridiculous in a sort of empirical way to say they're out of a title race. I thought before the season started they weren't going to be in a title race. And from what I've seen this season, I don't think they're going to be in a title race. And from what we've seen for the last 10 years, they're not going to be in a title race. So I stick with that. But again, we talked about a couple special things we see with this group. If it comes with Arsene Wenger continuing to show that this old dog's got some new tricks, they can make me eat some crow at the end of the season. And listen, no one wants that more. I mean, all the criticism of Arsenal. I mean, Arsenal fans, I love you guys, but you're the most sensitive out of any single group. Because here's the thing. When you criticize, like, someone's kid, you know, you're at the playground, you're like, you know, your kid's kind of a maniac. I just saw him, like, try to bite a kid's face. I mean, that parent will lose it on you, right? Absolutely lose it on you because they know their kid's a bit of a maniac. Arsenal fans know their team's a bit of a mess, and they see the tiny little things that they could do to be title contenders and win titles. I mean, there's no overhaul necessary. They are so close to perfection. So they get mad when we criticize them, forgetting the fact that the reason we do is because we want them in a title race. Of course we want Arsenal in a title race. The league is better, the game is better, the entertainment is better if Arsenal are in a title race. So I'm hoping Arsenal fans towards the end of the year are sending me all sorts of, you know, told you so. Tweets, and I'll love them. I'll absolutely love them. I'm not going to make any wild Gary Lineker underwear bet with you guys right now, but I'll take all the crow that I can if that happens. But until then, Tad Potters, enjoy your Halloween. Don't eat too much candy. And stay on the road.